Sergeant Marnie should have a black beam for daylight work. I had had an incident with Sergeant Marnie long beforehand when I was just a member of the territorial unit, and I was arriving with my family outside the Strand Palace Hotel. We'd been to the theater. We came in a taxi. Marnie opened the door, and I searched in my pocket and found a threepenny bit and put it in his hand and said, "Take this, my good man." Never forgave me for that. The real excitement was that now and then, at night time, a Sergeant Sharp and a Corporal Cook, as they were names, went out from troop headquarters and would try and break into our searchlight unit as though they were members of the public trying to break in, or maybe German spies. And we would always get warned by troop headquarters to keep a sharp lookout and don't get cooked. A chap called Ivoy, an Irishman, was waiting for them. We had no rifles. Yes, we had two rifles, that's right. We weren't allowed to use them. So we went around with pick helves, and he was waiting for Cook. And he broke his shoulder by bringing this down on him as he tried to climb in over the rope. And when he was asked why, he said, "I didn't know who he was. He could have been a thief." And that stopped that game. Then when I was at Hereford, I was then a mere gunner. And there were two little subalterns, second lieutenants by the name of Lieutenant Hood, and Hume Spry was the name of the other. And they were doing something with a searchlight right across the other end of the barrack square. And it was known that I had been well trained. And our Sergeant Major, who had a voice like Sergeant Major Britton, looked at me and said, "Do you know how to do what they're trying to do, Gunner Rubenstein?" I said, "Yes, I do, as a matter of fact, sir." And he said, "Right." And right across the barrack square, he shouted. And, of course, Sergeant Majors had very little time for subalterns. They had nothing but contempt for them. And he shouted across the barrack square, "Mr. Hume Spry and Mr. Hood, will you please stop what you're trying to do until Gunner Rubenstein comes over and shows you how to do it?" I'm not sure whether I was more embarrassed or they were as I quietly walked across the barrack square, and it seemed an interminable length, showed them what to do, and then came back. They didn't go to France. They were lucky. But life in France was really very pleasant. When we were at Guine and places like that, there were two or three estaminets. I used to go into one at the beginning of the week, sit down, and during the week I would sample everything that they had in bottles. I'd go right from the left to the right. But what did amuse me was the average British soldier who couldn't speak French would ask me to do the interpreting, and every day all they ordered was eggs and chips, ruby, and a beer. And I would say, "Oh, for God's sake, man, you're in a foreign country. Can't you ever change?" And they never would. They wouldn't change from their French beer, which was awful, to the various drinks they could have had. Also, I was a little shocked. I was only 21 and quite innocent when a French boy of about 6 years old came up to me one day and said to me, "You give me corned beef, I let you jigger-jig my sister." I didn't take the offer up, but a lot of people would have done. I suppose one of the best days we had was when we were shown over a wine factory near Armentières, all the detachment commanders. It was a very pleasant time. Another thing I remember was that when I had my own searchlight unit, it was based on a part of the old Hindenburg line, and I trained four chickens from this farm to lay their eggs on sandbags in my office. I gave one back to the farmer and kept three for myself. He used to make homebrew beer, and you got a litre of this beer for 85 cents. It was very strong, too. One of our sergeant majors was demoted because when Captain Oliver, who was in charge of C Troop, came round to his searchlight site, he was caught in the arms of a French lady. So were most of his detachment. So poor old Sergeant Major Loveless lost the rank of Sergeant Major and came down to Sergeant and spent 5 years as a prisoner of war regretting the loss of money that he suffered. Same thing happened, so I was told, to a sergeant major. I met him a couple of years later. When the Duke of Gloucester came round, he was aide-de-camp to Viscount Gort, who was the general in charge of the British Expeditionary Force, and naturally he got a little worried and shouted out, he was in charge of the guard, shouted out, "Royal salute, present arms." And of course he should have shouted out, "General salute," because General Gort was a higher rank than the Duke of Gloucester. And the Duke of Gloucester demoted this man to sergeant immediately. Again, this was a man who lost a lot of money in those 5 years, and he hated the Duke of Gloucester from then onwards. But the problem of sex didn't really worry me when I was in France, but I always remember one of them who had gone to the Black Cat, one from my own unit in Calais, and lucky that he managed it before the place was destroyed, and he came back in a real Yorkshire accent, said to me, "She tried to bite it off, but I wouldn't let her do that to me." And I really had to laugh at him. He really hadn't heard of that method of sex at all. But they supplied a need. Later on, I'll discuss the question of how sex happened in prisoner of war camps, and how we were able to cope with our natural instincts.